Welcome to the Lockbox Podcast. Join me, your host, Brian Dominguez, and other special guests as we discuss life, leadership, and real estate.
Thanks again for being on the Lockbox. We're excited to chat today. I had the privilege of listening to you in person at our retreat in Nashville, where we got, 125 independent brokers together.
Yeah, 120-something, 25, 26 over, what do we say, 27 different states, I think, Brian. Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible. And all partners with The Locker Room, a national real estate coaching company that partners with broker owners and their agents to really focus on the cornerstones of importance of real estate. And those four pillars for The Locker Room are what, Jake? I'll let you just kind of share with us what that looks like.
Sure. Yeah. Everything we've traced back to the four pillars, which are growth, retention, productivity, and profitability. Odds are if any challenges or opportunities for improvement present themselves, you can trace it back to one of those four.
And The Locker Room was started by you. You're the owner, founder in 2016, right?
That is correct. You've done your research. Good job.
I've done my research, yeah. And it's really an incredible, full disclosure, I'm a client of The Locker Room and a little over a year my brokerage partner with The Locker Room. And I can tell you our growth has been tremendous. Our excitement about the industry has been revived. Our productivity has gone up. And we've recruited, I think we've doubled in size since we started. So not a commercial, but a true testament to something that I really believe in, and really honored to have you with us today and discussing not only leadership, but this concept that you introduced those of us that were in Nashville to, which was turning defining moments into a superpower. And so I wanted to dive deeper into that. You shared with us your story and kind of the steps to do that. But I was curious, where did that concept, how'd you come up with that? What did that idea look like for you? How did that take shape?
So full transparency, because, you know, that's how you roll on podcasts. So, you know, honestly, I pulled that together probably 2 weeks before the Nashville event. Wow. And the reason is because at the time of us talking right now, at the end or middle of September, I'm actually the closing keynote speaker at the state of South Carolina's real estate convention, realtors convention, I should say. And, their theme this year is be the hero or something along the lines of the hero theme. So I'm like, huh, well, I've always wanted to create a course about like people's defining moments and how that shaped you. And I just found a way to kind of tie it in with the title of creating your own superpowers. So it is consistent with the theme of this upcoming event. So now I've just taken it and ran with it. Last week on Friday, I recorded the whole thing to put into our Locker Room University as a course now, complete with a worksheet and all these things. Cause my first run in Nashville where you were at was a dry run. And I'm like, I could have done so much better. But now having gone through it a couple more times since, it's definitely clean. It's smooth. And we have that accompanying worksheet. So it's like a stop and do and complete type exercise.
Well, that's exciting. I think if I think about your life and you kind of, I think maybe intrinsically realize that there are moments that shape us and we kind of hear that mantra that things happen for a reason, but this was much more succinct in describing how those moments are really not only defining, but important to flip and gain the experience at a much deeper level than applied towards your life. And that's what was fascinating to me.
Yeah, I've always carried that. I mean, I guess, yes, to your original question, like, where did that really, really come from? Through a lot of my own journey and experiences, as you heard that particular day, Brian, and working with literally tens of thousands of agents, hundreds of leaders, there's this common theme where people either don't feel like they're enough or that they're worthy or their confidence and belief in themselves warrants big success or whatever that means to the person, mm-hmm. combined with books that I even listen to and read. So I'm not knocking the self-help personal growth industry, but there's a lot of that noise that's fed at us that says basically you're not enough. Success lives outside of your comfort zone and you just need to accept that and get busy, you know, doing things that you hate. And I just want to flip that message on its head saying, you know what? Let's not discount our experiences. Let's not discount, you know, our prior careers that led us to where we are today, because they say success leaves clues. Well, there's little breadcrumb trails on every failure, every success, every former career, every past relationship that didn't work out that's created you who you are today. And it's because of that, not despite of that, that you're able to be successful and unique and own your own brand and all of that stuff. So it kind of carries over into that realm, but it starts with who am I? What am I dang good at? And stop worrying about what I'm not so good at. And I'm supposed to be better in these areas where I'm just average. My philosophy is let's just go double down and be exceptionally great at the few things you are really good at and that you enjoy doing.
Which I love that. And if you gave all of us permission that we're listening to your story that day to own the good, the bad, and the ugly, not have, you know, the shame around it, but really to take those moments and redefine them to something that propels us forward or helps us learn more about ourselves. And I think that process where we sometimes don't want to really go too deep in the pain points in our life, you gave us permission to own them and use them to our benefit, which I really liked. I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's liberating, and we don't pause life. It's just this whirlwind constantly around us. And we're always worried about what's next. How am I going to put food on the table? And it's just a unique moment when you get a group like that together or your listeners right now in Lockbox to say, pause, just pause for a second. Maybe a journal, maybe just sit in a quiet room and think. I don't know what everybody's deal is, but you got to get into that zone and say, where have I come? And appreciate that journey. And there's a great book. I get zero royalties. It's impacted my life. And it's The Gap and the Gain. So anybody looking to really kind of explore this further, go check that book out, The Gap and the Gain. And it's a great perspective on life and just success. And so many of us achievers and ambitious folks that want to do more, we constantly are living in the gap. Mm-hmm. And we don't take enough time to stop and reflect back and see, where have I come? I'm going to appreciate the gain, not just constantly living in this gap of more being the answer.
I love that. That's great. Well, why don't we kind of jump right in? What does it look like? Is it a step-by-step process, or what does it look like for somebody that won't have access to your class at Locker Room University? So share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So as we kind of have broken this now and made it into an actual course, not just storytelling time, I usually give people these four simple steps. Step number one is examining your current reality and or belief system, right? It's interrogating where am I right now and being honest with yourself, going inward. And a lot of that, like I gave the example of, is, you know, I presented success does not have to live outside of your comfort zone. That's where how a lot of us are programmed or conditioned and wired to believe. My take on it is actually success at least starts, if not lives, in your strength zone. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of compared one versus the other and what that meant, where we're made to believe that we're not enough, or unless I'm uncomfortable constantly, I must not be achieving the success thing that so many others are. And, you know, I just take issue with that, I guess. So step one being examining your current thoughts, beliefs, and state of reality. And there's a lot packed into that and a lot of questions that certainly go into that that I'm happy to circle back to. But step two, for anybody taking notes on this, is then studying your game film, as I call it. So now that I've got a dose of reality, here I am. Step two, let's go back in time and study your quote unquote game film. And a lot of my sports references, you know, by now, Brian, is why I choose that. But think of any elite athlete or team that's a dynasty. I guarantee you, if you go watch their game film and post game interviews, they say things about how they studied in the war room, hours upon hours of videotape about themselves and or their opponents, to know the strategies and best plays to execute to win the game. Mm-hmm. So no different for us in our life, this game of life. I've got to study my own game film and go back and highlight the highs that defined who I am today and shaped my character, as well as the lows. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, that takes you to step three. Once you kind of create this highlight reel, step three then is actually turning what we call those defining moments into your superpowers. Right? Asking questions like, hey, yeah, that happened. I'm not proud of it. Maybe I feel ashamed of it. Or on a high, I'm really proud of that. Go me. Right? But asking deeper questions around, what did I learn from that? What was the real gift or lesson or principle inside of that defining moment? If it hasn't served me well because I'm carrying this baggage around, flip the script. How can that serve me in the future? Right. If some of you went through a bad breakup or a divorce or something, what's the silver lining? What did you learn from that? And how is it no longer serving you in the present? And yet, how can it serve you to be a stronger, you know, superhuman type person moving forward?
Yeah.
And then, of course, step four is creating the action plan. What are you going to do with it? Now that you've got all this charted out on scratch pieces of paper and thing, what are we going to do about it? Does that help shape your mission, vision, belief system for your business? Does that help dictate who you choose to surround yourself in self with in terms of relationships? On and on and on, you know, and sometimes it's just simply telling somebody. Like, some people are very public. Many people are very introverted. Maybe for you, you say, you know what? Now I've crafted my story and I am who I am. Mm-hmm. Love me or hate me because of it. I am who I am. You can judge me all you want, but this is my story, my journey, and I'm planting the flag in the ground saying I own it. Yeah. Some people want to go on Instagram or Facebook and do a live and share it with the world. That's fine. Yeah. Or maybe you share it with your loved ones or somebody that just is willing to listen to you and it feels good just getting it out. That's it in a nutshell, really, is those four steps.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's rare that people spend the time to go through steps like that to really find out who they are, right?
100%.
100%. You know, we have to be comfortable with it. But then once we have that information, I mean, what a power to attract the right tribe, you know, do business the way that we want to do business. I mean, it really kind of sets the groundwork for a much more fulfilling life, I think.
Yeah. Well, it does. You're right. The prerequisites to this to be effective, because nobody's looking you over your shoulder, nobody's grading papers here, is you've got to go inward. Number one, you got to be in the right mindset, free of distractions, put your cell phone away, go out by the lake, whatever it is you need to do. And you got to have a little pep talk with yourself to be vulnerable and maybe go some places that you've otherwise stuffed away and never really wanted to revisit again. I'm going to ask that you face those head on at least one last time so you can come to grips with it and move past it versus carrying that luggage around with you. It's slowing you down. We don't have to like. We've all made stupid decisions and screwed up plenty of times. Have no doubt. I've yet to meet a successful person who hasn't been through some stuff.
Sure.
Okay. It just is, right? And yet it's not necessarily judging one another on what we've done, but judge me on what I will do and the character and how it shaped who I am and what I can do with that moving forward. It reminds me of that Marianne Williamson poem. If anybody's familiar with that, it was highlighted in Coach Carter basketball movie, where she says, by letting your light shine, it unconsciously gives permission for others to have their light shine as well. And it liberates them. It's a whole poem, but look it up on Google, Marianne Williamson, if none of you are familiar with that, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
That's great. I was thinking back to your story and one of the defining moments that you shared with us that I'd like you to share, which I think really seemed like was kind of a fork in the road and really propelled you in a certain direction with your baseball career. Yeah. And it was a quote that your coach said to your team, right? yeah. And the reason that it resonated with me is because I remember a boss telling me one time, "Stick with me, kid, and I'll make you rich." And it was a very, you know, it wasn't a comment that he said that he meant to be offensive. He meant like, if you do the things I tell you, I'm going to give you all of this great wisdom that I have, and someday you'll be something. And I took that as a very clear moment for me to determine that he wasn't going to be in charge of how rich I was. And that was a process and journey that I was going to be in charge of. And I was 23, I think 23 years old. And I remember that very vividly because I thought, okay, this is kind of the pursuit of entrepreneurship and owning my own company and getting paid for my effort and building something a little bit bigger. But those types of comments, meant to be hurtful or not, really have an impact. So share with us what your coach said to you as a kid in the baseball field.
Yeah. And there was, of course, a lot I haven't shared. And my story is no different than a lot of people's stories. So when I speak of this, it's not meant to, you know, say, oh, woe is me. It's just, hey, it's just my journey. And everybody has their version of this probably. But yeah, what you're referencing was to many, probably what would be an insignificant, you know, moment in their life. I mean, I date back to my sophomore year of high school is the story that you're referencing. It's like, I'm a sophomore, like I'm barely driving now, you know, like big deal. And I didn't appreciate it at the time. It's only later in life. Now I can look back and say, ah, now I get it. But basically what happened was we were in a playoff baseball game and the game got canceled due to a severe storm. And we were supposed to get the equipment up and run into the gymnasium really quickly. And our coach was not happy, just in a foul mood, and probably because we were goofing around, if I'm being honest, not getting the equipment in there fast enough. But finally, when we all sat down and he's, you know, given us this speech, if you will. See, I'm from a town of 700 people in the middle of nowhere, Illinois. My whole high school had 200 kids in it, 50 in my graduating class. Wow. But I was very open and public with people growing up that I wanted to play college and professional baseball. Like, nobody from the sticks of where I'm from does that. They just go on a farm, and that's cool. That just wasn't the path I wanted for myself. Mm-hmm. So my coach knew prior to this my aspirations of wanting to play ball. So at that moment, he points his finger in my face, and he says, none of you will ever see the inside of a college or pro stadium unless you buy a ticket. And this was from my coach, who's supposed to be one of my biggest cheerleaders, you would think. But none of you will ever see the inside of a college or professional stadium unless you buy a ticket. Wow. And as I shared with you guys that day, any young kid or adult, you are at that crossroads like you referenced. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. Do I go down path A, which is, you know, coach, you're probably right. I mean, what am I thinking? This is small town USA. How am I ever going to get seen by scouts and whatever, whatever, whatever? I could have bought into that story. Mm-hmm. Or I could have said, here's a bit of big, you know what? I'm going to go show you and prove you wrong. And that was what I chose to do with zero guarantees. I knew I was good, but who knows? I just wasn't going to leave anything out on the field, metaphorically speaking, to let that man say, see, I told you so.
Yeah.
And I just had that chip on my shoulder ever since then, man. And that's consistently shown up in my life, whether it was my very first real job after playing pro ball, where I got a job with Lennar Homes, home builder down in Jacksonville, Florida. And a couple years in, my sales manager says to everybody at a sales meeting, hey, the man without a plan will always work for the man with a plan. And I looked at my buddy Josh, and we're like, did he just say that? And he was kind of arrogant, whatever, anyways. But I'm like, oh no, here we go again, baby. So I ended up leaving my job, moving back home, and starting an indoor baseball training facility, being my own boss, taking my first crack at entrepreneurship. Yeah. So it's just, you know, those patterns identified and what we do with those and the choices we make in that moment obviously shape who we are today. That's the whole point.
It sounds like if somebody wants to watch you move, they need to challenge you that you can't do something.
100%. I had my wife speak that day, and it's like, yeah, I'm sick in the head. Like, I love haters and people that are skeptics. I feed off of that. So I don't know. I don't mean to be ugly or confrontational about it, but yeah, if somebody's going to basically challenge me or say what I can or can't do, I rise up. I bow up a little bit to that. And
well, I think that's interesting, because the more you know yourself and the more loud you get with your purpose and the more you start getting out in your life and showing up in the way that with this new power that you didn't have before, there will be haters, right? I mean, I don't know that we can escape that. There will be people that criticize us or are jealous or judge or feel like, you know, something. So you have to have a healthy way to deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, it's more of a reflection of them is what I've learned to come to terms with. I don't go showboat or try and show anybody up anymore. That was the old me that's like, haha, you know, but I do it for different reasons to still say, here's what's possible. And I'm not going to let anybody ever place a limit on me. Unless they've got a direct phone line to the man upstairs. How do we ever really know? And nobody thought they could run the 4 minute mile until Roger Bannister did it. And now all of a sudden something was impossible and it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's all around us. Everything's impossible until somebody does it.
That's what you're right.
Yeah.
And this is a little off script, but that feeling of rejection in real estate, we get that a lot, right? You can be a, you know, $30 million a year producer, 150 homes, but somebody chooses in your tribe a different realtor to represent them, and that still hurts. What are your thoughts on rejection or that sucky feeling? Does it go away? Does it get easier?
Yeah, it's well done. I'm actually happy you kind of brought it back to, well, all of that is in principle, but how does that apply to real estate for the listeners? Like, that's a perfect example, Brian, is we hear no so much, and a lot of people from my experience can take that very personal. they're not saying no to you. They're saying either no, not right now, or whatever it might be. But so many people fear that two-letter word, no. And there was, again, I'm a book junkie. So the book Go For No was very impactful for me. It's taking the no and actually celebrating it, changing the way we look at the no. So you can't tell me if your average commission there is, let's say, 10 grand. And my research shows for every 50 conversations, it'll eventually yield you a piece of business. So you mean to tell me you wouldn't go get 49 no's to get that 50th yes, and you just made 10 grand? Or imagine this. Imagine being in a room where 50 seats, 50 people, butts in those seats, like a training room. And I said, hey, guys, got a special treat for you today. Under one of your seats is an envelope that contains 10 grand. All you got to do is go around and say, you got my money? You got my money? You got my money? You got my money? I bet you, you would hear 49 of them until that person says, yeah, it's in the room. Well, guess what? When you're out there at Target and shopping at the grocery store, somebody's got your money. Mm-hmm. You just need to talk to enough people and get enough no's and gather those no's, put them in your bag saying, somebody's got my yes. And I'm not going to stop until I find that yes.
That's a perfect analogy. Really?
So, you know, so that's my reaction to no. I used to dread it. I mean, I'm not like, I got superpowers, but wasn't one of them. Okay. I dreaded no and was fearful of no, just like anybody. I'm human. Right.
Right.
And I've learned to accept them. I've learned not to take it personal. And here's that sick thing again. In a weird way, I actually look forward to them. Like, I love handling objections now and stuff. But it's like, all right, I'm not emotionally attached to the outcome now. Even though I still got to find a way to put food on the table, I just know they're not saying no to me 9 times out of 10.
Well, and I wonder if the more you know yourself and what you're good at, if those no's, you take them less personal because you don't feel that your identity is connected to every validated interaction with somebody, right? So if somebody says no and, hey, we're not meant to be, maybe that's a little bit easier to accept if you know who you are.
100%. And a no is a very short-term way of looking at it. Like if you're the agents listening to this right now are clearly in personal growth and development. I applaud you all, by the way. If you plan on being in this business for months, years, whatever, the no right now is a yes someday. You know, so what are we doing here? What game are we playing? If it's this popcorn society that we live in where I need instant gratification or else I'm moving on because my attention span is yay big, you're playing in the wrong game. You're playing in the game that everybody else is playing in. But if I can play that long game and say, all right, cool, it's a no right now. You have no need or desire to move or sell your home. Got it. Doesn't mean either you don't know somebody else who does, or it doesn't mean that some situation or life event happened that in 2 years, as long as I've done my job and stayed in touch with you, that no is now a yes. Every person we meet falls into the category of they currently own a home. They currently rent a home. So they're either a future seller, a future buyer. Everybody needs a roof over their head.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of timing of when that happens, and are you in front of them when that need occurs?
Sure, sounds like leads are everywhere. Prospects are everywhere.
Every human you come across is a lead. I mean, no offense if people are buying leads, but come on, you know, just say hello in the Walmart line or Target line, whatever y'all have out there, and there you go. That's the same person that you just bought from XYZ online leads program. Mm-hmm. What? you know, everybody is a current buyer, a current seller, or a future buyer and a future seller, period. End of story.
I love it. And more, those listening can get more nuggets like this if they become a partner with the Locker Room or they join a brokerage who's a partner with the Locker Room. So as we wrap up, I cannot believe it's been 30 minutes already. We've packed a lot into that really good stuff, but how can people learn more about you and your company and how to interact? Or
sorry, I do talk a lot. Sorry, guys.
No, I love it.
That time went fast. No, I appreciate that. First off, kudos to Brian. If you're listening to this, you know, what he gives back to this industry and the fact that he's taken time out of his busy schedule to do these podcasts for all of you, I think says a lot about him. So although I appreciate the shameless plug, I'm going to throw it right back at you, man. You're the real deal. And I hope everybody listening to this knows that and seeks out the relationship with you.
Appreciate that.
But yeah, as far as we're concerned, everybody can either go to TLRNation.com, which stands for the locker room, not to be confused with TRL, whatever Carson Daly used to do back in the day. Or they can look us up on Facebook and Instagram and all those things. Just type in the locker room real estate coaching and training, and it should pop up for you.